to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest-running podcast, now in our 16th year. This week we feature an interview with Bill Hornbuckle, the president and CEO of MGM Resorts International, on how his company has endured the pandemic and how it is planned for the future during this time. The GGB Podcast is brought to you by IGT, where the new Peak Bar Top Poker Cabinet will put your bar over the top, built with an emphasis on player comfort and game variety. Learn more at IGT.com/peakbartop.
Give me a gift I know I never can repay.
MGM Resorts International has changed quite a bit over the past few years. When the company instituted its MGM 2020 program that was aimed at reducing costs, creating efficiencies, and streamlining the corporate structure, there was no vision of the pandemic. But when it hit in March of last year, MGM 2020 had the company prepared for the worst. But when Jim Murren resigned as chairman and CEO of MGM in February, Bill Hornbuckle was elevated to CEO, an inspirational leader who learned his trade working under Steve Wynn, Terry Lanney, and Murren. Hornbuckle has set his priorities on his employees first, then the future of the company soon after that. He spoke with me for the cover story of the January 2021 issue, 25 People to Watch, at Hornbuckle's office in Bellagio in December.
To imitate the man, I'm just a...
Bill Hornbuckle, thanks for joining us on the GGB Podcast. It's good to see you again. We've known each other for a lot of years, and I've done this before, so I'm glad that we could do it. And congratulations on being named permanent CEO for MGM Grand. It's nice to, or MGM Resorts. It's nice to see them pick you, because when Jim left, I thought you were the perfect choice. So,
well, thank you, Roger, and welcome. I appreciate that very much.
So, this has been a real tough year for Las Vegas and everybody around the world, for that matter. You know, while casinos have reopened in Vegas and largely around the country, what kind of impact has it had on this company when it comes to revenues and also to you know, employees and the morale?
Well, let's start with the employees, because they've been the hardest hit through all of this. Before this hit, including Macau, we had 83,000 employees. At the trough, we ended up with about 14 or 15,000. Mostly essential corporate security, obviously protecting the assets. And so they've been hurt tremendously by it. But come May, as you know, we began to open both regionally, first in Mississippi and then ultimately here. And as we sit here today, we've brought in back roughly 50-odd thousand of those employees. Hmm. But, you know, there's still a large sector that is still not back to work.
Sure.
And, you know, for the foreseeable future, over the next several months, it's still going to be touch and go here. You know, safety has continued to be job one.
Right.
Both from customers. We've not opened up every floodgate to ensure that we protect not only our employees but our customers. But the impact to the company has been pretty significant, like all gaming companies. You know, we're down, pick your favorite subject, 60 to 80% in top-line revenue,
right,
whether it's hospitality, food and beverage, gaming. Entertainment's down to zero.
Right.
You know, conventions and meetings are down to 90, you know, they're down 99%.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the impacts have been substantive. Thankfully for the company, you know, we went on an asset-light strategy starting back in 2017. Mm-hmm. We created our REIT in 2016. And so, you know, we are sitting consolidated over $7 billion of cash in liquidity. And here at MGM Resorts, over $5 billion. And so it does give us not only the comfort that we will survive all of this,
mm-hmm.
but frankly, the opportunity to think about the future and think about it relatively aggressively. And so we're excited to be thinking in those terms.
Okay, great. So you're satisfied with the process and procedures you've set up to keep all the properties to keep your guests and employees safe?
Yeah, you know, we put in something called the 7-point safety plan.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, in fact, well, maybe I'll walk you through the casino a little later. You may have seen these. We have everything from hand washing mm-hmm. stations
right.
for our customers. We spent universally about $17 million in plexiglass mm-hmm. throughout the enterprise. Obviously, mandatory masks. We've put our employees through heat detector when they come in for temperatures. We have testing available to them as soon as they hit the back door to the extent they want. We've, over time, pushed out testing. We did 5,000 employees leading into the Thanksgiving holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're constantly vigilant about all of that. We created a program for the meetings market called Convene with Confidence,
mm-hmm.
which we're excited by. It was a joint venture. We put together with Clear that we do testing. It can mm-hmm. be done in 20 minutes. So I can get you in a room. I can test you pre-convention. I then ultimately put it in an environment on Clear where it gives you a passcode, if you will, to go in and out of different events. And so it's created an environment where, at least for those groups who want to come, through constant testing regimen, they can come, they can enjoy the property, they can feel safe about it, all things considered. And it's a place to go, and hopefully in the initial months ahead, something that's unique and different and from a safety perspective puts us in good light. Same process the NHL used, the NBA, same deal, and we put it to play. And the Clear piece makes it a bit unique. We also digitized our business. You know, we've been talking about mobile check-in here for several years, lot of companies. In 4 months, we got mobile check-in in. so you can check in on your mobile device. You can use it for your room key. You can order now just about anything from it. We've put digital menus in place. They're just, again, less contact, less touch. And we've put in queue lines. You can now queue up mobily so you don't have to wait in line. We'll call you up and over when it's your turn in time. And so all of that's to the positive. The environment is safe in the context of as any environment can be. We think we've done a really good job with that. That being said, we all know what's happening with the country right now. So fortunately, and you know this is a down time of year for the industry no matter what. Groups aren't necessarily here anyways. And so I think the next couple of weeks, hopefully we all get a reprieve and we can face the new year with an additional additional push, if you will. And obviously vaccine, you know, I think next week 160,000 vaccines are heading to this community and beyond. You know, we hope by second half of the year we're celebrating with a whole bunch of our customers sitting out in that casino and ultimately trying to get into entertainment events.
So you just mentioned, the mobile check-in, and these things were coming, but they were probably a year or two away. But this has kind of pushed it forward. Is there going to be like a good result from this in terms of that? And like cashless gaming is the big thing now too.
Yeah, look, almost 35% of our customers now are checking in mobily. I think as we skew into the group market and a little more tech savvy, in meaning the audience and the demographic, I think that's going to get up to 50%. We have a digital platform that we are pushing heavy on all things digital, including a e-wallet, because now to the extent I know you're checked in, I know I have you in a digital platform. As we get into preference marketing, I can offer you the kinds of things you want. And if there's a digital wallet, not only can you do it here in brick and mortar, but with a simple example with our BetMGM proposition, I can let you take funds potentially over time and say, I left with $800 in my wallet because I was a winner, and I can use that for BetMGM for the next X period of time. And so heavily pushing that agenda, trying to get it to the next step.
Well, that's the ideal of any casino operator, to be able to touch your customer for 24/7.
Yeah, and 365.
Right, exactly.
I mean,
you
know the story here. The average customer comes 1.3 times a year. And if I can touch base with them every day in some way, shape, or form, it's just obviously better for all of us.
Sure, no question. So entertainment, you mentioned, has always been a big part of the MGM experience. You've opened a few shows already, but when are the big Cirque shows and things of that nature going to come back? Do we have any idea yet?
No. But look, I would say this. You know, most of those shows can't operate under 50% and make any kind of economic sense and be, you know. You know, as we come out of this, as a cure goes into play, as volumes continue to increase, even with social, you know, the shows that we did have open, now we've subsequently had to close because of the governor's ruling, but we had 8 shows open. But, you know, the actual audience and the vibe from where they were having to see was less than ideal, but they were working with one exception. 7 of them were just killing it, because people are starving. I think the point is people are starving for what we do and what we offer. And so fundamentally, I think as soon as they can, meaning the market will allow them to come and protocol will allow them to come. If we're not in full show mode by end of next summer, my view is something's gone terribly wrong. But time to tell.
No question. So a lot of the regional casinos have reopened with non-smoking regulations installed, you know, basically because they're always wearing masks. You don't want to bring down the mask, not necessarily in Vegas. But you actually did a non-smoking option at Park MGM. What was the reason for that, and what kind of feedback have you got, even if it's only open on weekends?
I guess we have a luxury. We have 9 casinos in Las Vegas. And as you know, they serve a lot of different spectrums in the market,
sure.
From economy all the way up to here at Bellagio. And Park MGM was redone, repositioned, as you know, in 16 and 17 and into 18. We spent about $750 million, re-enhancing the property, putting entertainment in, putting restaurants in that we thought would cater to a younger demographic, that we thought would be focused and on point with millennials who were looking for a little different experience, mm-hmm. hence Nomad, obviously Park Theater and the kind of entertainment program we've been able to do. And so when it comes to smoking and non-smoking, first and foremost, it was to give a preference, particularly to a market demographic we think would prefer. Mm-hmm. And we have eight other places that if you want to smoke in the casino, you can go to.
Right.
And so if it was the only place, I would not have advocated it.
Right.
But it's not. To date, now, it was, we haven't been open that long.
Sure, right.
And then we had to go to weekends only.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And so it's a little too early to tell, other than those people who have come truly have enjoyed it.
Right.
And of those people who have come, a goodly portion of them have now come because of it.
Right, right. And do you think that that could be extended across the enterprise at some point?
I wouldn't want to go there yet. No, yeah. I think it's a preference.
Yeah.
You know, I view that as a preference.
Sure.
And if we mandated it either way, then it wouldn't be a preference.
Right.
So, no, not now.
Great. So you recently reorganized leadership positions across the country, and just last week you put Corey back in as COO, which makes sense. It seems like most of the people who are head of properties now have really came up through the MGM bench. They know the system. They know the way MGM does things. Was that your idea? And do you feel like you have a really good team in charge of all the properties right now?
Absolutely, it was my idea. I did it in collaboration with a bunch of C-level folks running around here, and the board's understanding, because ultimately I too have a boss.
Yeah.
But all that being said, obviously, we started 2020 2 years ago, trying to improve our margins, trying to improve our operational efficiencies. We tried to then, and we are now even more so, leaning more heavily into our centers of excellence, i.e., let's make sure the people in the field are field generals, catered to customers, employees, and service. Mm-hmm. Let's make sure the corporate centers that we have, whether it be hospitality, gaming, or marketing, are focused on the bigger strategic initiatives. Mm-hmm. And let's not have so many people, which we did historically, that they're competing with each other. Mm-hmm. Let's make it so that people running the properties, particularly, and I know you know we did this earlier in the year through COVID, we stretched out the leadership group so the senior leaders at like this property also oversee Park MGM, meaning Bellagio. Mm-hmm. MGM oversees New York, New York, Mandalay, Luxor, and Mirage, Excalibur. Aria, because of the JV, sits on its own.
Sure.
But the idea was to keep people very focused, expand their daily operating responsibilities as the properties go, put the leverage on strategy, pricing, and yielding, and other things of that nature into the centers of excellence. And to date, and again, we're not in a normalized environment, I think it's worked exceptionally well. There was always the moves of last week were contemplated in many ways, but it's been a stepped process.
Sure.
I would like to think I now have the team in play,
The
team that's going to take us forward over the next several years, not only to relaunch here in Vegas, but regionally with Jorge Perez leading the troops. I'm very excited by where we are, and I think ultimately where this takes us.
Sure. Yeah, we just did an interview with Jorge last week, and
he
seems like a real, real capable guy.
Oh, no, he's a really long-time guy, as you know, been here, been regional, been back. He's very excited for Jorge.
Great. So you mentioned REITs. How has your operational abilities changed now that the REIT is owning the properties?
No, flat out, full stop. The one thing that particularly the Blackstone REIT required for here, Mandalay, and MGM is a certain capital commitment, which is fine. It was a commitment that we had been doing anyways.
Right.
But it will always mandate and demand, which is great. The properties stay fresh, they stay relevant, they stay new. And so short of that, no. I mean, it's as long as we're paying the rent, they're happy.
Yeah.
Their shareholders are happy, of which we're the largest.
Okay.
And so, no, it hasn't changed the operating.
So when it comes to capital reinvestment, that's something you do and not the REIT?
Correct. Yeah, okay. The triple net REIT, which simply means if we want to replace that wall, it's up to us to do that. Mm-hmm. Now, there are substantive things. I'll give you a simple example, like the Park Theater, which was a substantive add-on. Mm-hmm. We did it and sold them back a rent stream against some of that capitalization.
Mm-hmm.
But they won't pay for that new wall, but they would pay for something like that.
Okay.
So it, major assets.
Let's talk briefly about Macau. You know, it's obviously been harder hit than any of the jurisdictions in the U.S., and then now the concession process is about to begin. How are you feeling about the Macau market right now?
Well, look, always promising, in because we always have to keep this relevant.
Right.
You know, Macau, I can remember, was a $45 billion market heading to, we thought, 65.
Right.
You know, hence Cotai, and like all of us in the industry, we went... We continue to try to build to the extent the government would allow us. Reality is, as you know, it got hit. Not twice. And, you know, it was down in the low to mid-20s.
Okay.
It's now, well, pre-COVID, it was well on its way to 35 again.
Right.
Put that in perspective to Las Vegas, what are we, 6 or 7?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, it's still, even in its circumstance going forward, you know, 5 times bigger than Las Vegas.
Right.
And there are, you know, 6 licensees. So always optimistic. There's a marketplace of younger, which is, I think, the key differentiator between here in Las Vegas,
mm-hmm.
In Las Vegas and Macau. Younger Chinese clientele of note who
yep.
just love the notion of gaming and the spirit of it, and I'm going to win, and I'm going to come, and I'm going to go in. That's compelling as hell.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there's a will, there is a will.
Right.
We will all find a way. You know, obviously, particularly because of the government mandate to continue to employ everybody,
mm-hmm.
It's been pretty yeah. expensive year.
Yeah.
Come October, come Golden Week, we've broken through that. I'm really happy we're going to make money now, cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, last month we actually covered not only our cash flow, but our interest.
Okay.
So, you know, we're not only not bleeding money in terms of just operating,
right.
but we're now, in theory, covering our nut. The challenge is only the next couple of months. The government has mandated 20,000 visas a day.
Mm-hmm.
It won't raise that until there's a vaccine, that everybody in the community who wants to be is vaccinated.
Right.
And so 3 months, 6 months, but mm-hmm. it's not a year.
Right.
And so by, again, this time next year, I think we'll be, you know, pent-up demand. I think we'll be back to the new norm.
Okay.
You know, the new norm there, you know, given the Chinese government's oversight on capital flowing in and out of that market, capital flowing out of China in general.
Mm-hmm.
Time to tell what that overall impact is.
Right.
But, you know, we're still going to make hundreds of millions in EBITDA on each one of those properties.
Sure.
And so on a relative basis, still very compelling.
Okay. So you're not particularly concerned about the concession renewals?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm not concerned.
Yeah.
You know, the chief executive has not been overly instructive in terms
right.
of, or his government, in terms mm-hmm. of what is or isn't happening. They claim it is on time,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, is a lot to accomplish, because if you read the current, I don't call it law, but they have to give a 6 months notice
right.
to say thank you, but no thank you. I don't expect that to be the case.
Right.
But that means literally by the end of 21, a process has to be put in play to the extent there is going to be a process
mm-hmm.
and a determination made by the end of this year.
Right.
If, in fact, they're not going to extend the deadline. Time to tell whether they choose to do that or not.
Sure.
But time is precious right now is the
yeah,
point.
No.
The Peak Bar Top Cabinet from IGT features a 23-inch constant curved LCD display and a robust variety of proven games. Based on extensive feedback from customers and players, IGT designed a more comfortable machine to meet the needs of all players. With a curved screen that reduces glare, a more ergonomic button deck, and appealing best-in-class games, the Peak Bar Top has everything players want for the ultimate entertainment experience. Learn more at igt.com/peakbartop. And now back to our podcast.
So let's briefly touch on Japan, too. You were yep. the chosen partner of the Osaka government. Now, of course, with the pandemic, it's less. You know, we really don't know what's going to happen there. So,
A little bit of a correction. We are Oryx's partner.
Okay.
Okay. And we've formed a JV that will also have a consortium of Japanese companies. We are the only partner who ended up at the final bidding
okay.
table with the government.
Okay.
So what we'll chose, we haven't right. been chosen yet.
Okay.
But we are the last standing soldier. we will, by July of next year is when the RFP has been pushed to in Osaka.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully post, you know, sometime next fall, we'll have been anointed as its nominee. And then by the end of 22, the central government has reportedly said that's will anoint the three locations.
Sure.
I can't imagine, I mean, you know, if you think about it in retrospect, I can't imagine national government won't say yes to Osaka. We're the only soul in Osaka.
Right.
So, you know, from here to here, while there's a process and there are some things to tackle and get through in terms of taxation and how it views the opportunity given post-COVID. All that being said, our future is about Asia, and one of the things that's clear. We got to get relicensed in Macau and continue to grow that business. I absolutely want to be in Japan. You know, it will become our Singapore as it relates to others that have been fortunate enough to get into Singapore, and so it's very meaningful for the company going forward.
Okay, great. So let's move to online gaming. You're partnered with GVC, now known as Entain, and you formed a corporation called Roar Digital, which is now BetMGM. So, the name's changed, but it's still the same partnership. So how has that partnership been working so far?
Really good. Look, we got off to a slower start than we want. Mm-hmm. We had these two behemoth companies trying to figure out who's on first.
Right.
In the meantime, DraftKings and FanDuel took a lot of jersey share, as you know.
Right.
But I will tell you, within the last year, we have a full steam of momentum. Mm-hmm. There's a new CEO at GVC, or Entain. He and I talked to him 2 hours ago.
Yeah.
We talked four times a week about where's the business, where are we going, how do we help. And so the relationship has never been stronger.
Mm-hmm.
The business has matured from lagging, not being first to market, to the last three markets we've been first in, Tennessee of note. And it's paying dividends when you're first in.
Right.
We're in 9 markets, heading to 11 by end of this year. And we opened Pennsylvania yesterday for over the weekend for iGaming. So it's our third iGaming state. And we are hopefully being 20 by the end of next year.
Okay.
Little interesting tidbit, because, you know, winning and losing goes up and down, as you know, in this space.
Sure. Right.
But 6 weeks ago, we took over a weekend, 500,000 bets.
Mm-hmm.
This weekend, we took over 1,000,000 bets.
Yeah.
So in 6 weeks, the betting activity has doubled.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about that, 6 weeks ago, you still had baseball, basketball, football.
Right.
You had this massive content. Today, we kind of have football.
Right, pretty much. Yeah.
And it's doubled.
Yeah.
And so the trajectory of that business is very promising.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to exceed our expectations this year, and I'm hoping next year. Not for the faint of heart. You know, we're going to spend hundreds of millions chasing this down because it is about acquiring players now.
Mm-hmm.
And the long tail of that will provide productive ultimately, or hopefully.
Right.
But, you know, my view is, you've probably heard me say this in other conversations, but, you know, there'll be 3 or 4 really key players and then everybody else because the cost of entry is hundreds of millions at this point.
Yeah, right. And especially with sports betting, the margins are pretty narrow.
Yeah, they can be. So this is a volume-based business. And, you know, it's aggressively being promoted. I mean, you know, and so you see the offers, you know.
Sure. And, of course, the iGaming is really that's where margins aren't that narrow, and you can actually make some decent money there. Are you going to be going to states that are have currently not legalized iGaming and looking to promote it there? Or?
Well, we always have. Yeah, but look, arguably with COVID, you know, and all the ravage that it's caused.
State,
but I know it's due in this budget. I know it's due in New York, by way of example. Yeah, we are. We're going to, you know, correctly, politely, and look, we don't go anywhere we're not wanted. It's too hard.
Of course. Right.
But having said that, you know, whether it's sports betting or iGaming, and look, not every state's going to want iGaming.
Sure.
Even every state that wants sports betting. But there are some that, you know, if you have brick and mortar gaming, the notion that you don't want iGaming is kind of like, what?
Right. Well, I think they're going to look at the taxes they make from sports betting and realize, well, look how much I can make from iGaming.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
and as you know, I think you've said it is the economic engine behind all of this.
Yeah, no question.
It's a much more efficient engine than sports betting.
Yeah, no question. So Caesars Entertainment was just purchased by Eldorado Resorts. I mean, what does that mean for the Las Vegas Strip? You know, will it change the competitive nature of the Strip, or especially since Caesars announced they're going to sell at least one of their properties here? What do you think that's going to do?
I time to tell.
Yeah,
they've made substantive promises in terms of margin enhancement and synergies, and so time to tell. I would say this: they've been a beneficiary already. When you have 58 properties, I think, that are pumping into the 7 or 8 they have here,
right?
that's a good engine.
Yeah, for sure.
And so, you know, I think their total rewards programming will be even more important. You know, their market mix of casinos over 40%. Mm-hmm. And so that's more in-house promotion. Now, it does reach out into some of the regional properties and changes some of those landscapes. And hopefully it drives enough business here that they don't do some of the pricing things that we've seen them do lately over time. You know, as the market continues to mature and return, because they've become aggressive. Mm-hmm. And I'm not anxious to replicate what I saw in Atlantic City a while back.
Right.
It just, nobody wins. It's right. A net sure. zero-sum game, a race to the bottom. And so I'm cautious of that. I mm-hmm. want to make sure the marketplace is. But, you know, it's a competitive environment. They'll do what they can do. I think getting another property, whether it's theirs or anybody else's, into, you know, taking it from this amount of ownership and expanding it by one or two or three, mm-hmm. I think it's good for the community. I think it's good for the town. More entrepreneurism, hopefully more capital, and hopefully a better product in the long run. Because okay. if we, you know, at some point, it's a decade from now, you won't be able to look back and say, how did we leave Las Vegas? Did we leave it better in terms of product and sure. offering and appeal
right.
or not?
Right. So you mentioned meetings and conventions. You know, Caesars just opened a big meetings area. The LVCVA is opening an expansion of their property. You mentioned your strategy when it comes to health and safety. But, you know, we did a poll on our website at one point where we asked them, is this, you know, this Zoom thing going to remain a big part of each convention? People think they are. So does that mean you have to have more technology built into your convention centers and things of that nature?
Yes. Look, fundamentally, I don't think our business changes in the long run at all.
Yeah.
With maybe the caveat that as it relates to smaller meetings, the big stuff, the CESs, anyone who's selling product, mm-hmm. and obviously with Mandalay and right. some of the scale of our stuff, you know, when you get into a retail product for sale, people got to come see it, feel it, touch it, engage. So I don't think that's in jeopardy. Will the small tech companies show up with their 50 folk and, you know, have a conference? Don't know. You know, eventually I believe they will.
Sure.
You know, there's nothing like in person. The other side of the coin is, by the way, we've experienced this already. People are closing offices because work from home, right?
Right, right.
But once a quarter, they want to get together. Mm-hmm. They got it. At some point, you got to touch flesh sure. and understand yeah. who your people are, et cetera.
Right.
So as much as some of it will be turned on, mm-hmm. turned off, we're positioning ourselves to have some of it turned on.
Mm-hmm.
When we redid Park MGM, there's a whole, what we call a meeting lab in there
mm-hmm.
that has technology that takes, you know, Pluto and back kind of thing.
Sure.
We're going to take some of those learnings and stretch it out because there will be, no matter what happens over the next several years, a component that says, yeah, 2/3 of the delegates may want to come,
right.
but 1/3 may not, or whatever the numbers are for any particular conference, and can we broadcast it? And can we, you know, do the kinds of things that make it efficient
right.
for someone sitting in their living room or in their office? Mm-hmm. And yeah, we'll be prepared to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But long term, I just the desire, the need to meet, particularly in Las Vegas.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's not just about the meeting; it's about the culture. It's
right.
about
yeah.
the you know.
Yeah, yeah. No, I just reading about a big one of the big tech companies in San Francisco. They leased a big office building there, and they just broke their lease. Cost them $90 million to break the lease because they figured out working at home was working better for them. You know? So, but you're right; they're going to have to meet somewhere at some point and recognize their employees.
You know, we surveyed. We have called 2,700 corporate employees, mm-hmm. and a goodly portion of them are still working at home.
Yeah.
So we surveyed them last maybe a month and a half ago. 78% of them, give or take,
yeah.
love working at home.
Yeah.
Now, eventually, you got to pull them back in.
Right.
But to the point, we're going to rethink about our own corporate office environments
yeah, sure.
and how we. Not that we won't have one,
right.
but how it's structured. Not everyone needs an office.
Right.
You know, let's have an area you come into
right.
once a week. You meet the boss. Whatever the programming is, but we're looking at it ourselves as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that makes sense. So you've worked for some legendary CEOs. The three of them that come to mind, of course, are Steve Wynn, Terry Lanni, and Jim Murren. What kind of things did you learn from that you're putting into effect now that you're a CEO?
From Steve, focus.
Yeah.
Focus, passion. Becoming more customer-centric as an organization again. We did a lot of growth and financial acumen,
mm-hmm.
but customer centricity, programming, you know, frankly, there was a moment where Steve was out of the business
right.
And we let them not only get back in it, but with a vengeance.
Right.
And, you know, arguably win is a mantle that we're after from a customer service perspective. Mm-hmm. Flat out, full stop.
Right.
That's what we learned, and that's what we're focused on. From Terry, discipline.
Yeah.
You know, stay disciplined. Again, it's about focus. And so taking that, stay measured.
Sure.
You know, in your communications. And, you know, he always had a famous line, if it ended up on the cover of the Wall Street Journal, would you be happy with it?
Right.
And so if you monitor your behavior and the behavior of your company with that mindset, mm-hmm. it does keep you focused. and Jim, you know, Jim's an entrepreneur. Jim was a yes guy, meaning mm-hmm. let's go do.
Right.
And so as we emerge out of this, and we will, there's a lot to do. And if we come out of this with the kind of liquidity, although this has been painful economically, heavily, I think we'll be in great shape.
Yeah.
And I think there will be opportunity, both within this industry and, you know, the digital sector
sure.
as well.
Sure. Well, those are three great guys to learn from, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So last question, where would you like to see MGM in the next 5 years?
More diversified in terms of geography mm-hmm. and in terms of lines of business, meaning not as much brick and mortar. So look, if you think about, go back to the iGaming subject, you know, if we could make digital revenues 20 to 25% of our earnings, mm-hmm. that would be a big
sure.
push. Less Las Vegas, not that we'd have less properties necessarily, but that we would be less relying on Las Vegas because mm-hmm. clearly, and you know, COVID's the example.
Sure.
When COVID hit, our stock went to $7.
Right.
You know, we got hit worse than anybody because
right.
of the nature of our location. And so diversification led by Japan in that context,
mm-hmm.
that would significantly change it, and then led by Asia generally.
Right.
I don't know what regional opportunities may come or go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're always difficult to do it at the scale we do. And I'll give you a simple example. In Maryland, you know, tremendously successful property.
Right.
I don't know if you've been there.
Sure,
but
I have. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
We spent $1.5 billion
yeah.
for that beauty.
Right.
And one of the reasons we did it, and it's paying off, is the good news. I think it's cash flowing over a couple hundred million a year pre-COVID. But the reason one of the reasons we went in all in is that, well, there'll never be casinos in Virginia.
Right.
It's fully Republican, blah, blah, blah. Well, what are they, just approved 5?
Right.
No, they're 75 miles away,
right.
thankfully.
Yeah, but still.
But still, and so as you think about new markets,
yeah.
you get me, you know, and doing what we do,
mm.
you know, there's not a lot of places you can put a pin and say, let's go invest over $1 billion and make
right.
it make sense.
Right.
And so I'm a little more, not pessimistic, but I'm a little more guarded mm-hmm. in what we do on a regional perspective.
Right.
And so, you know, just realigning here, relaunching here, getting everything back to where it could and should be.
Mm-hmm.
Letting our 2020 plans go into play and our operational margins and the things that I think we've realigned ourselves to really, you know, really blossom here. The Japan expansion or the Asia expansion, obviously the renewal of our license in Cotai or Macau is critical. And then ultimately taking our digital business really to the next step.
Yeah.
And making it make a real difference.
Yeah, no question. Well, Bill, thanks for the time. I really appreciate it. It's great to see you, and we're looking forward to seeing what happens when things come back. I mean, I think MGM is positioned very well.
Someone's looking more forward to it than I am. It's been a hell of a year. It's been good.
And your stories of the road. I thank you for the freedom when it came.
Raise the bar with the Peak Bar Top Poker Cabinet from IGT, built with an emphasis on player comfort and game variety. Learn more at igt.com/peakbartop. To learn more about how MGM and all the large gaming companies are preparing for the recovery, visit ggbmagazine.com. To get all the news of the gaming industry, particularly of the coronavirus situation and its impact on gaming, including daily updates, subscribe for free at ggbnews.com by using the code GGB180. Don't miss a single episode of the podcast. Subscribe on iTunes and Spotify today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB Podcast.
I'm just a living legacy.